Genesis chapter 2. Dr. Harry Ironside used to tell a story of one of the generals of Cyrus the Great, the king of Persia. One of his generals came home from a campaign and was shocked to find that in his absence, his own wife had been arrested and was languishing in prison. She was charged with treachery against the country of Persia. Her trial was to be held the very day that the general came home from his campaign. He hastened to the court of Cyrus, and the guards brought in his presence his own beloved wife. He hardly recognized her. She was pale. She was disheveled. She was a broken woman from having been in prison. She was there, and the charges were brought against her, and she tried to answer those charges, but it was all to no avail. It was like the evidence was just totally stacked against her. Her husband, standing near, watched rather helplessly as he saw that which was taking place. And then he heard the stern voice of Cyrus, the ruler of Persia, pronounce a death sentence upon his wife. In a moment, he watched as the guard seized his wife and drug her away to be executed. Now, would you look, I'll finish that story later, but would you look at Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. This is one of my favorite passages in the Word of God, and I want to say to you, every word of the first three chapters of Genesis is totally and literally true. It is historically true. It is scientifically true. It is full of incredible wisdom. It's going to be exciting to get to heaven and sit at the feet of Jesus and listen to Him expound and explain these chapters. I don't think anybody has ever begun to get all the truth there is out of these chapters. Truths about the origin of the universe, including this planet and the other planets. Truths about plant life, animal life, God and Satan, sin and salvation, and the home and marriage and the proper relationship between a man and a woman. Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an help meet for him. And out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air and brought them unto Adam to see what he would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was the name thereof. And Adam gave names to all cattle and to the fowl of the air and to every beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found an help meet for him." Nobody proper for him. The gorillas came by, just didn't meet the quota. The lions came by, something still to be desired. The chimps came by, something still lacking. The elephants came by, something still lacking. A good dog came up and wagged his tail, something was still lacking. A cat came by, and Adam said, there's a lot lacking yet. And there's all these animals coming by, there were still things lacking. Something wasn't right. There was not found an help meet for him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam. And he slept. And he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman and brought her unto the man. Somebody said that God made the man first, then he made the woman. And some fellow said, well, the reason that happened was because he didn't want any advice on what he was doing here. But then the lady turned around and said, no, that wasn't what it was. God made a trial version first, then He made His masterpiece next. And I think the latter is probably true, don't you? And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. I want to speak to you this morning on the subject, the ABCs of a happy marriage. ABCs are the basics. They are also the elements out of which every word, thought, and idea in the whole realm of human expression is formed. If you have the 26 letters of the English language, you can take those letters and you can form any book you need to write. You can explain anything you need to explain. And so, in a sense, I'm giving you the ABCs this morning, the ingredients, not only for the basics of a good marriage, but also so that you'll have what you need to solve any problem in marriage and build a successful marriage. The letter A is simply this: always keep your mate as your number one relationship. Always keep your mate as your number one relationship. God did not look down from heaven and say, "I hear a baby crying, I'm going to make a mama to burp him." God looked down from heaven and saw a man and said, "He needs help. And I'm going to make a lady to help him." Here was a fabulous, beautiful, perfect earth, phenomenal resources, gold, silver, iron, oil, all the chemical elements, enough on this earth to support billions of people. A virtually an almost infinite variety of animals and birds and fish, and beauty beyond comprehension or description. And God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone." Now back there in chapter 1, God had said in verse 18, God saw that it was good. In chapter 1, verse 25, God said that it was good. And in chapter 2, verse 18, God said, "But it's not good that this man should be alone. My creation's good, but this man needs some help. Money is no good if there's not someone else to share it with or to spend it on. Material possessions have meaning only in relation to people. What good's a bike without a rider? What good's a ball glove without a boy? What good's a basketball without somebody to dribble it and toss it? What good is a basketball team without parents to watch?" I was over at the Church League game last night. I walked in, somebody commented about my interest in sports, and I said, "You know, I frankly care little or nothing about sports. I care a whole lot about the people that are here tonight. Thought I'd just drop by and see folks for a little bit." What good is a suit without a man to wear it? What good's a dress without a lady to wear it? What good's a kitchen without a cook? You've probably heard the joke. It's sort of worn out now, but somebody here hadn't heard it yet. The won't ad somebody, some fella put in the paper, said, "Good wanted, good woman who can clean and cook fish, dig worms, sew, and who owns a good fishing boat and motor, please enclose a picture of the boat and the motor with your reply." Typical self-centered fella there, wouldn't you think? And I want to tell you something. You can have boat and motor. If you don't have somebody to put in that boat, you don't have very much. Now, it still shows the need for a relationship. And there are many relationships in human life, but the number one relationship of human life is the husband-wife relationship. It's the priority relationship chosen by God Himself. When God saw that Adam was alone, He could have given him a son. Now, that's strange to our thinking, but the truth is, as the Creator could have done anything He wanted to do, He could have given Adam a daughter. He could have given him a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, a friend. He could have given him a girlfriend. He didn't do any of those. God gave him a wife. And fellas, notice this. Living with a lady without being married to her violates the responsibility of men to protect women. Ladies need to be protected not only from the dangers of the world, but from the potential of being defrauded by a man who may even care for her. There was wisdom and purpose in what God did here. Sometimes we guess at things. We say, "Maybe this will be best. Maybe this will work." Could I tell you something? God wasn't experimenting here. God wasn't taking chances or trying to figure things out here. And it's vitally important that you and I realize this. Otherwise, we may mess up all of our other relationships. Something happens. When a man keeps his heart for one woman, finds that woman with the help of godly authority figures, and then marries her without either physical or emotional defrauding, and then puts her in the number one top place, humanly speaking, in his life, till death do them part. I want to tell you, that solves a lot of problems in human life. Have you noticed when your relationship with your mate is right, you can handle virtually every other problem, fellas? Have you noticed that? And have you noticed that if your relationship with your mate isn't right and other problems come, that it's hard to handle those other problems? It's hard to handle problems anyway. We all know that. But if your relationship with your husband or your wife is right, it's like we can make it through this. I had a perspective a while ago y'all didn't have. I watched Mr. B come up here to sing that special, and I looked back to see his wife looking straight at him, beaming at him. You know what she was saying without saying a word? Your number one encourager is down here. It really doesn't matter how well you sing, you're going to do good. There's something about that, isn't there? And he knew when he was going to, when he walked down, and I didn't see this, but I'm sure something like this happened, that there was either a pat on the leg or a glance at him that said, that was good. And you know, it didn't matter whether anybody else liked it or not. She liked it. That made it good. And that's the way life is. If your wife is with you, if your husband is with you, then you work everything else out. But if that isn't there, then you're missing something. Or if you watch someone who loses a mate. And I was thinking as I prepared this message, I kept thinking about those who have lost mates. And I'm not saying their life cannot be complete, because it can. But if your mate is still alive and your relationship with your mate is not that number one relationship of human life, everything else is going to be out of whack as well. Anything else goes wrong can easily put you over the edge. Number one relationship in life is not the parent-child relationship. Number one relationship is not the son and mother relationship or the daughter and father relationship. I said something like this earlier. I think I'll say it again. God didn't look down, see a baby crying, and say, I'm going to make a mama to burp that baby. God looked down and said, there's a husband who needs a wife. That's critical. I got a call the other day from one of the leaders nationally in the homeschool movement, and we were talking on the phone. He said, Brother Davis, there's desperate problem in our movement as a whole, and I'm for Christian school, I'm for homeschool, I'm for training children the right way, whichever way you do it. But he said, there's a desperate need in our movement. He said, you know what's happening? He said, we've got mamas that are having all these children. They raise these children, and then the children are gone, and there are two strangers living in the house together. This husband and wife don't know each other. I read this, clipped this out some time back. Here's the tendencies, and I think it's pretty accurate, the tendencies of the typical American marriage. Listen to it. The goal in life becomes to find a mate, your dating partner. Now, this isn't a way to do it. This is what's happening, all right? The dating partner becomes the center of your life, and at that point, your communication is great. Now, I disagree with that. At that point, the communication is not great, but they think it's great. They're not really, typically in the dating relationship, two people are not really communicating, not truly. Typically what is happening there is that this girl thinks this guy is communicating with her, but that's not really taking place. Then it keeps going. God comes in second. Unless you're in college, then God comes in third. For women, the center of their lives during the engagement period is the wedding. Things such as the color of the napkins and that type of thing dominate their thinking. The man's focus during the same period is on the honeymoon. 6, 8, or 12 months after the wedding, the man's priorities begin to change. Career moves into first place, wife is second place, and God is third. Communication, incidentally, let me stop right there and say this to you. Really, the top priority relationship of all of life is your relationship with God. The top human relationship must be your wife, and then your children, and then you go right down the line from there. But if you, men and ladies, if you will make sure your relationship with God is what it ought to be, your relationship with your mate will be better. If you will build that spiritual relationship with God, then these other relationships are more likely to fall in line. You let a son or a daughter build the right relationship with God, they'll have a better relationship with mom and dad. You let a husband build the right relationship with God, he will have a better relationship with his wife. No wife minds, excuse my expression here, but no wife minds playing second fiddle to God because that will make her husband a better husband. When she sees him praying and reading God's Word and then sees him caring more for her, then she says, you build that relationship with God. But if she sees him becoming, she's going to have problems if she's got to play second fiddle to his boss at work, especially if his boss at work is a lady. Now, Here we go. Let's see. Career moves into first place. This is the first year after marriage. Wife is second. God is third. Communication begins to take too much effort, and therefore it begins to deteriorate. A child comes. For women, that often becomes her number one priority. For men, it's number two after career. Any communication from here on is focused on the child. The marriage becomes child-centered instead of couple-centered and deteriorates rapidly. The children leave home. The empty nest syndrome takes over. Communication ends because life has left the marriage and the marriage relationship dies because it's been sitting there dormant for so long. What really, they weren't building. Let me tell you something. Build your relationship with your mate all the way through your married life and then build your relationship with your children upon your relationship with your mate. Children don't need daddy and mommy doting over them as much as they need to see dad and mom doting over each other. Several years ago now, I talked to some parents having problems with a five-year-old. Five-year-old's very insecure. As soon as dad comes in the house, this five-year-old is... As soon as he walks out of the house, this five-year-old is crying a lot till daddy gets home, and then just clinging to dad and not wanting to let go of dad. And here's what I told him to do. I said, tell dad when he comes home, no matter what the child does, mom greets him at the door. He hugs and kisses mom in the presence of the child. He stands there and talks to mom. Let the child do anything he or she wants to do. Just they can scream, run through the house, anything. Dad focuses on mom. Dad talks to mom. Dad can say, hi, how are you? I'm talking to mom right now. And I'll be with you in just a minute. And talk to mom. Do that for about 5 minutes. Then spend time with the child. Took about 3 weeks for the child to settle down. As soon as the child knew there is security in the relationship between mom and dad, it gave security to the child. Children don't learn what they hear, they learn what they see. That is the danger of divorce. Because a preacher can preach against divorce, you can tell your children it's wrong, but if you divorce, you're setting your children up to divorce. And I'm not being critical of anybody who's been through a divorce today. I'm saying to you, whatever your marriage you are in this morning, stay in that marriage. Build that marriage. Children learn what they see. There was a survey run a while back. They were trying to find out what is the greatest fear children have. Do you know what the greatest fear children have is? It's not of somebody breaking into the house. It's not of somebody killing them. It's not of a car wreck. It's not of an airplane crash. The single greatest fear children have is that mom and dad will get a divorce. It's the number one ultimate horrible, terrible nightmare for a child is that dad and mom will get a divorce. Dad and mom, do anything you have to do, but don't divorce. If you love, I've said this to people over and over, if you love your children, you say you love your children, then don't divorce. Because when you divorce, you are sentencing your child to a life that without the dad and mom together in the home, and it just creates all kinds. Now, I'm not condemning anybody this morning. I'm saying you got to build this relationship. Years ago, I had a fellow come to me. I was preaching. I'd only been pastor here for a few months. Never will forget it. And I took several Wednesday nights. My wife taught the ladies on the basic needs of a man. I taught the men on the basic needs of a wife. I had a key man in our church who came up to me, and he looked at me and he said, "Well, Davis, you know what you're saying is good and all that." And he said, "But, you know, I don't understand why you need to do all this." So my wife and I have a good relationship, and we've never done all these things you're talking about. I looked at him and I said, "You've done it. You just didn't know you were. Because if you don't do the right things, you don't have a good relationship." The Bible talks about a wise woman building her house. There are things you have to do. You have to build this relationship. This husband-wife relationship was meant by God to be a permanent relationship. No way. Look, there was Adam, there was Eve, there was no one else. If Adam didn't like Eve, he couldn't have Susie. I'm sorry, Eve's it. If Eve didn't like Adam, there wasn't Steve around anywhere. Incidentally, it was also not Adam and Steve, it was Adam and Eve. Now, if you accept anything else, then you plant the seeds for the destruction of your relationship and other relationships around you. It's astounding to me. I have a little rental property here in Lincoln, and we've had it on the market now for to rent for a couple of weeks. It is astounding to me how many people call who are not married. I am not sure in 2 weeks. I'm not sure in 2 weeks of calls. I'm not condemning anybody here. I'm trying to get us to wake up and realize God started this thing out. Genesis 2 is rather simple. God made a man. God let him name all the animals, realized that it was not good for him to be alone. He made a woman and brought her to him, got there and married the two of them and said, "Till death do you part." Now that's simple, but boy, we have trouble with that. We get call after call after call after call. And it's interesting to me, she's a lady that calls. And she's a lady who says, "Well, my boyfriend and I'll be living there together." And can I tell you something? It wasn't that way 25 years ago. I've been around rental property for a lot of years. My parents had some rental property, and I've been around for... It wasn't that way 20... Now, there's always been problems like this, but it wasn't that way 25 years ago. But now, everywhere you... That's... And it's like it's become a common accepted thing. And now, because of the curse of divorce, there's all these prenuptial agreements. Listen to a prenuptial agreement. Well, these people, I wonder if marriage is even taking place in these things. I really don't know. When you turn marriage from a covenant into a contract, a covenant means, and the biblical word is covenant. Malachi chapter 2, and Proverbs chapter 2, the Bible talks about marriage is a covenant. And this covenant is like the covenant that we have with the Lord. It is an inviolable covenant. It is a till death do you part type of covenant. And here we got people just turning it into a contract. I wonder if it's even really marriage. I wonder what it is taking place. Listen to this. These things people are coming up with and then they sign them. I understand that nothing is forever, that there are no absolutes, and that now is the only real forever. I cannot make you happy or unhappy, but I can make myself happy. My happiness will be an invitation for you to meet, join me in happiness, joy, and love. I will set my own standards and depend upon myself for approval. I give up the myth that there is a one and only who will make me happy. See, this is the philosophy of the world, flies right in the face of what God did in Genesis 2. Incidentally, all this is growing out of evolution. Because evolution is not just a science, evolution is a philosophy that pervades all of human life. Now, since I understand we cannot be everything to each other, I will respect and value the importance of your having separate play and work activities with separate friends and co-workers. And you know, there's just a... There is truth and error mixed together in that sentence I just read to you. Do you hear it? There's deceptiveness in that. I will love, honor, and respect you, but not obey or subjugate myself to you until either of us changes his mind and maintains a change of attitude for a period of 1 year or until the termination date of this contract. Don't expect me to accept you as you are when you fail to maintain mental attractiveness and fail to take care of your mind. Don't expect me to accept you as you are when you fail to maintain physical attractiveness and fail to take care of your body. Listen to this one. I will put myself first. By keeping myself full, satisfied, and not hungry, I will have an abundance of joy, love, and caring to give to you. That's not so. That doesn't happen. You put yourself first, it makes you self-centered, which feeds and on itself and makes you more self-centered, and doesn't let you truly get... Let me tell you something. I am not supposed to live for myself. I'm supposed to live for that lady back there. Whatever she needs, I'm supposed to meet her needs. I reserve the right to have private areas of my life that I will not share with you. But I will not lie to you either by word or action. See the mixture of truth and error in these things? It makes it very deceptive. I will not give come-on signals to others for intimate relationships when I see that you feel threatened. Well, why would you do that at all? Not just when somebody else feels threatened. So what's the A? The ABCs of a happy marriage. A, always keep... Do you see how important this is? Always keep your mate as your number one human relationship. Now turn to Ephesians chapter 5. And most of the rest of the message is going to come out of this key passage in the book of Ephesus where Paul is writing and giving instructions to husbands and wives. And my second point is this. The ABCs. B, be humble to love your wife like Christ loved the church, fellas. Be humble to love your wife like Christ loved the church. Now that's what he tells us to do in Ephesians 5:25. It's a rather radical thing for the first century to hear. Frankly, it's still a radical thing for the 21st century to hear. Husbands, Ephesians 5:25, husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church. There's our pattern. You don't love your wife like the fellow down the street. You love your wife like Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. And when you see, you can use others for patterns as long as you are looking around and finding other men and women that you see that their life patterns the love of Christ for the church. Then you can pattern after that, but be careful. Christ is always the ultimate example. It's not saying love her because she deserves it. It's saying love her even if she doesn't deserve it. Love her when you feel like it. Love her when you don't feel like it. Love her, period. That is the important thing to do. Ephesians 3:19, I turned over a couple of pages. Just listen to this. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Now that's the killer right there. Whenever a husband ceases to love his wife enough so that he does not get bitter at her no matter what she says or does, then the lack of love to deal with that bitterness brings on the destructiveness of the marriage, or the destruction of the marriage, the potential destruction. Love your wives as Christ loved the church and be not bitter against them. And I mixed Ephesians and Colossians there properly, I believe. Don't let bitterness come into your heart for your wife. Love her so much. Live so sacrificially just for her that you will not let bitterness come in for any reason whatsoever. If you even sense bitterness starting to come in, you do whatever you have to do to deal with that bitterness. Now, this is a command, fellas. In our day, we talk about love this. I love candy and I love flowers and I love ball games. That's not what this is talking about. This is a love that can be commanded. In fact, it is commanded. Verse 28, you find it again. Look at it, Ephesians 5:28. So want men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. You find it in verse 33. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself. And then there was Colossians 3:19. There's four times a man is commanded to love. The Greek word is agape. It is a love of commitment. It is a love of intelligent reason. It is a love of self-sacrifice. It is love with a goal and a purpose. The world has it all confused and backward. Listen to me. Let me show you. The world says love to get married. God says love because you are married. The world says love to get married, and if you fall out of love, you fall out of marriage. God says you find His choice for marriage, you marry them, then anybody. Now, this is a love of commitment. Could I tell you something? That emotion of love, that thing can go like this. That can go all over the place. God says, love your wives. That means you give yourself for them. You commit yourself to them. Whatever they need, you're going to meet that need. Did you know, I was reading yesterday, I meant to brought the article out here. It was talking about the countries in the world where they get the Hollywood romance movies and watch them and sit and laugh at how ridiculous it is for people to be falling in love like that. They sit and laugh and scorn it and make fun of it. It's hilarious to them the way our culture toys with experimental romance. And if you love this one for a while, and then you get bitter at them, so you break up with them or you get upset. Something's not right, and then you love this one, and then you love this one, and we do it before marriage, and we do it after marriage. We need to get rid of this whole concept of experimental romance. We need to recognize you find who is God's choice for your life. You marry them. You're committed to them. That emotion of love, it can easily grow out of the commitment of love. Agape love is a love that survives even when it is not loved back. It is sacrificial instead of selfish. It is a love that seeks to meet a wife's needs. It is a protecting love. It's a love that builds instead of tearing down. Bible says, no man ever yet hated his own flesh. Did you ever see a guy set his finger on a board, take a hammer and say, you've had it now, boy. No man ever yet hated his own flesh. No man butts his head against the wall and says, I've had it with you. A man pampers his flesh. There are guys who stand in front of the mirror. Admires his flesh. Takes care of his flesh. He wants to go fishing, he goes fishing. He wants to go hunting, he goes hunting. Fellas, if you're never tougher on your wife than you are on yourself, then divorce will probably be far from you. Respond quickly to her needs. Rally to her hurting times. Respect her consistently. Do not put her down at all. To love like Christ loved the church means to be kind even in the little things. Husbands like to get in these little digs against their wives. Have you noticed that? This is a bad joke. It's funny, but it's a bad joke. I'm going to tell it so you'll know it's a bad joke. Not a dirty joke. It's a bad joke. All right? This hillbilly came out of the country and he'd never seen an elevator before. They walked into this building and his aged wife got onto the elevator and it closed before he could get on. He's standing there waiting. 60 seconds later, this young, beautiful woman came walking out. And he said, wow, how did you do that? I need one of those to take back home with me. Now, men tell jokes like that, and those are put-downs for their wives. It says, I'm not satisfied with you anymore. Well, I don't really mean it when I tell jokes like that. Then don't say it. All right? Don't say it. It's better not to say it. To love like Christ loved the church is to be sensitive to her needs. To want to meet her needs. If necessary, fellas, do what one fellow I heard about did. As he was coming home from work, he would stop one block from home at the stop sign, open the door, drop all his burdens from work out, And the last block on the way home, he would just think about his wife and the things she'd been through that day and try to meet her needs as he walked in the door. Love like Christ loved the church, a sacrificial life, sacrifice my plans, my dreams, my desires, if necessary. This is unconditional love. What, like Christ loved the church, what have we done to deserve Christ's love? Nothing. You say, but my wife is like this and this and this, and how are we to Christ? And Christ loves us with an unconditional... I heard a fellow on the radio the other night. It was really disgusting. Preaching against the unconditional love of God. Saying that there was no such thing. I've been steaming over it for 10 days now. Planning to write the radio network and say, do y'all realize what this guy taught on your network? Do you really believe that God only loves certain people if they did certain things? No. If my Bible teaches anything, it teaches He loved the world and He loved sinners and He loves you and me. And we're sinners and we haven't always done right. I haven't, have you? No. We're supposed to love with a sacrificial love. Jesus' concern was not for His own comfort. His concern was not to give orders and boss around everybody with an attitude of superiority. His concern was to meet the needs of others as though others' needs were more important than His own. And a man needs to give servant leadership to his wife. He needs to give spiritual leadership to his wife. And that will give a stability to their life and their relationship. Fellows, only as you commune with God does life level out and you get back in balance. And only as you commune with God does life keep its true perspective and purpose and direction and meaning. And that's the reason it's good you're in church this morning. I'm so glad you're here. And part of the reason you come to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night is so that when you begin to get off a little bit, then the Word of God gets you back in balance like you ought to be. Somebody had a 4-point outline for fellows to follow in relation to their wives. I thought this was good. Listen, number one, provide for her. The Bible says, if any provide not for his own, he's denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. I read an article written to an advice columnist. Listen to this, a wife writing. My husband and I have been married for 15 months, and this morning we had a very disturbing argument. As I finished my shower, I asked Jerry to hand me a clean towel. He told me to reuse the one from the day before because I need to start cutting corners to save money. I pointed out that he spends plenty of money going to football games, concerts, and bowling with his friends. He said he earns more money than I do and deserves to spend it however he wishes. What kind of partnership do we have if one half of the couple lives the high life while the other's on Skid Row? I'm a first-year teacher and barely earn a third of what Jerry does. I handle our finances and do not spend money irresponsibly. I've suggested we each pay a percentage of the bills based on our salaries. He says we should each pay half the bills, period. Any advice before I pull my pennies together and find a separate place to live? Sign me a poor wife in Ohio. And so, you know what this is? This is a result of ERA thinking. That's what it is. We can be equal. We can do any... A man is to provide for his wife. I didn't say it's a sin for a lady to make money or have a job, though I do believe that a lady's priority is the home, and I believe the Bible is very clear about that. But it is not my wife's responsibility to provide for me. I never will forget, we had a period of 3 months in our marriage. Now, we've been married 35 years this year, right, Regine? Yes, I got it right. Boy, I was getting scared there. I gave it wrong the other day, and I've been feeling guilty ever since. We had a period of 3 months where I was not working. I was in school, and my wife was working every day. It drove me crazy. Every day it was like, this isn't right. Something is haywire here. Provide for your wife. Secondly, protect your wife. One of the biggest dangers to protect her from is what you yourself can do to hurt her. Protect her from your own angry, selfish, abusive nature. Thirdly, praise your wife. You say, I can't find anything to praise her for. Praise her for putting up with you. Fourth, pamper your wife. Spoil her. Make her feel special. Treat her like you would that which is the most special in your life. One preacher put it like this. He said, I love this. This is one of my favorite things I've ever read. He said, I expect to live in such a way that with my wife that if I die before she does and she remarries, her next husband is going to hate me. He'll have to work overtime to do for her as much as I've done. Writing songs and poetry just for her, blowing kisses to her across the room, buying her nice things, giving her compliments. He's going to get tired of trying to take care of her the way she is accustomed to being cared for. Have y'all seen the Mr. Wonderful doll? Can you give me this mic here right quick, will you? Listen to this. Listen to what this guy says, all right? Come on, guy, talk to me.
Let's just cuddle tonight. You look so beautiful in the morning. No, you don't look at all fat in that dress. How could anything make you look fat? Oh, can't your mother stay another week? Hello, darling. Have I told you I loved you lately? Did you have a hard day, honey? Why don't you sit down and let me rub your feet? You're going shopping by yourself? How about if I tag along? Actually, I'm not sure which way to go. I'll turn in here and ask directions.
That's not Mr. Wonderful, that's Mr. Impossible.
I love you. Yes, dear. You've been on my mind all day. That's why I bought you these flowers. You know, honey, why don't you just relax and let me make dinner tonight? Why don't we go to the mall? Didn't you want some new shoes? The ball game really isn't that important. I'd rather spend time with you. Here, you take the remote. As long as I'm with you, I don't care what we watch. You know, I think it's really important that we talk about our relationship.
In amazing, even the world's figured this out. Incidentally, I blew it on this doll. I said to my wife several months ago, I said, you know, I need to get one of them Mr. Wonderful dolls just to use for a sermon illustration. So, we took the teen girls on a shopping trip in December for Christmas like we usually do. And the teen girls bought me this. I totally forgot I'd said that to my wife. They hand me this. I open it up, look at it. I look at her and I say, I don't need that, you need that. That's called blowing it, fellas. It's called being Mr. Unwonderful. I've posted this guy's emails. Fellas, I never recommend email newsletters. Never have. I recommend this guy's email newsletter. I've posted this guy. It's Todd Wilson. I ran into him at a convention a few months ago. Listen to this one he sent out. Hey, Dad. I stumbled on something quite disturbing the other day when my family and I road tripped to the mall. Along the way, we stopped at a mega kitchen store, and that's when I saw him. At the end of the checkout line, there's a sign that read, Mr. Wonderful. What kind of insane nonsense is this, I thought. I picked up a smiling man with a big head and squeezed his hand. With a smile, he said, have I told you how beautiful you are? I squeezed his hand again. He said, the ball game isn't really that important. I'd rather spend time with you. I squeezed again, and he said, I seem to be lost. I think I'll pull over and ask directions. That was it. I tossed Mr. Wonderful back into the box with disgust. I turned away only to come face to face with another display 5 feet away of bigger Mr. Wonderfuls. What is this? A plan to make the whole husband population look bad? Somebody's going to make a lot of money with these guys, I thought, knowing that every wife longs to hear words like those. Standing in the mega kitchen store looking at his used car salesman's smile, I decided I hated Mr. Wonderful. Then the thought hit me. Could it really be that simple? Is it possible to make my wife feel loved with my words? I mean, Mr. Wonderful only says 12 phrases. He doesn't change the oil, earn six figures, or take out the garbage. All he does is say nice things. Another thought hit me. I can do that. I can tell my wife how wonderful she is. I can offer to do what she wants to do. I can even stop and ask directions. Then a final thought hit me. I can be Mr. Wonderful. You know what? So can you. It might take a little work, but we can do it. Start tonight, guys. When you get home, wrap your arms around your wife, smile and say, I'm the luckiest guy in the world to have you for my wife. I love you. Then take out the garbage. Let's see Mr. Wonderful do that. Always keep your mate as your number one relationship. Be humble to love your wife like Christ loved the church. The ABCs, C, communicate submission and reverence to your husband. Communicate submission and reverence to your husband. Did you notice what he says here in Ephesians 5:22? Starts in verse 21 by saying, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Then it says, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. And then in verse 33, the wife see that she reverence her husbands. It's hard for wives to get husbands to communicate. You know what the best way to do that is, ladies? Don't focus on communication. Focus on communicating submission and reverence to him. Focus on getting him to understand that you're gladly following his leadership and that you really reverence him. A lot of wives think of submission as a monstrous thing. As soon as I mention the word, I can feel it. I can always feel the submission. But you know, a home with one head is not a monstrous thing. A home with two heads is a monstrosity. And that really is the choice. Either the wife chooses to submit to her husband, or she turns her home into a freakish organization where chaos rules. Sum it up like this. Two-headed things are freaky and don't live very long. Who is it that submits? Is this some weak-minded, wimpish-willed woman? On the contrary, most wives I know are quite a bit smarter than their husbands. Men? I said, most wives are smarter than their husbands. A little better, fellas. Some of you guys need to get permission from your wife to say amen, all right? Many wives have stronger wills. If they didn't, their homes would have fallen apart a long time ago. It doesn't take weakness or ignorance to submit. It takes strength and intelligence and primarily spirituality and faith and trust in God. The issue here is not inferiority. The issue is spirituality and God-ordained authority. It takes a powerful, spirit-filled woman to trust God enough to submit to her husband in everything. That's what verse 24 says. Years ago, I was counseling a lady who was having trouble with the concept of submission. I remember sitting in my office. I never have forgotten this day. Sitting in my office, and for 30 minutes, I kept going around and around trying to explain submission. And finally, I said something that got her to realize what it was. I said, ma'am, it's like this. He's the head. When God sees a problem in the home, He comes to the head to straighten it out. If you're up there trying to be the head and God starts slapping on the head, then you're going to get hit. You got to duck so God can slap your husband around. If you will submit, that's what submission is. Just let Him be the head. I was doing an interview on a radio station several years ago in El Paso, Texas. And I was preaching on the family in a church there, and they found out about it, and we got on a big radio station, long outreach, and this talk show host, she was real sharp. And she started asking me about different things about the home. And then she got on the topic of submission. And she said, now how about this thing of submission? You could tell right away she didn't like it. I said, ma'am, here's the way it is. Any organization, somebody's got to be in charge. I said, there's somebody in this radio station right now above us, and we're under their authority. And I decided when I walked into this place, I was going to do whatever y'all wanted me to do. I said, ma'am, you're in charge here. I have no problem with that. Whatever you want to talk about, I'll talk about it. If it's something you don't want to talk about, we're not going to talk about it. I decided when I walked in here that you were the person in charge. I said, marriage is simply this. There has to be somebody in charge. God said it's the husband. It doesn't mean he's any smarter, any better. It just means that's the way God wanted it to be. That's all. The second command for wives is to reverence husbands. It means respect him, admire him. The need of a woman given by God is for the committed love of her husband. The need of a man given by God is for respect and reverence. When a wife comes in for counsel, she'll say something like this, "My husband doesn't love me." I've heard it over and over. When a husband comes in, he'll say this. You can almost hand him the script before he walks in. No, he's going to say it. "My wife doesn't respect me." Just like a husband should look for ways to show and tell his wife that he loves her in little things, so a wife should look to praise her husband for every little thing he does for her. A lady by the name of Suzanne Boyce wrote this. It was in a magazine article. It shows, get this, how reverence helps him but does something for you as well, ladies. "Is the clothes hamper invisible to my husband?" I muttered, picking up his socks, which he'd carelessly tossed on the floor as usual. "Lord, I know his birthday's coming up, but I'm so annoyed with him, I don't even feel like thinking about his present." A little voice seemed to say, "You've been doing a lot of complaining lately. Can't you come up with a reason to be thankful for your husband?" I sat down at the computer. What was I grateful for about Richard? I started to type. "You fix things around the house before I ask. At our son's football games, you're right there on the sideline next to me. You pray. You keep in shape." As the days passed, I kept finding new things to praise. By the time his birthday came around, I had 365 reasons to be thankful for my husband, one for every day of the year. I printed the whole list, cut out each entry, and put the slips of paper in a jar. He said, "I can't believe you noticed these things." He loved his birthday jar with one reverent statement for each day of the year for the next year. But truthfully, I'm the one who got the most out of it. These days when I find Richard's socks on the floor, I know I've got one reason to be irritated and 365 reasons not to be. Do you see how reverence, it motivates a husband, it moves a husband. Listen to me, ladies. If your husband needs to be changed, that's the way to change him. I have wives all the time, "Well, my husband is this, this, and this, and how can I change him?" The only way, if you're going to change your husband, the key way to change him is with reverence. If you're going to, that's a powerful, powerful, powerful force. I began with a story about a general who was in the army of Cyrus the Great of Persia. While he was away, his wife had been accused of treachery and brought in and tried. The day he gets home, the trial is taking place, and he walks in to see her being brought in. She is dirty. She is disheveled. She is beaten down. She's been in prison for weeks, and the trial takes place. She is condemned to be executed. In a moment, as they were about to drag her away to execute her, her husband, standing in the courtroom, ran forward and threw himself at the feet of the emperor. He cried out, "Sir, not she, but me. Let me give my life for hers. Put me to death. Spare my wife." And as Cyrus looked on him, he was so touched by his devotion, his love for his heart, for his wife, that his heart softened. He remembered how faithful the servant had been, and he gave the command that the wife should go free. Fully pardoned on the spot. As her husband led her out of the room, he looked at his wife with joy and said, "Honey, did you notice the kind look in the eyes of the emperor as he pronounced the word of pardon?" And she looked at her husband and said, "I didn't see the face of the emperor. The only face I could see was that of a man who was willing to die for me." That's loving like Christ loved the church. ABCs of marriage is this. Always keep your mate as your number one relationship in human life. Be humble to love your wife like Christ loved the church. Fellas, if we're not humble, we won't do it. Pride will keep us from doing it. and C, communicate submission and reverence to your husband. Is there a lot more that could be said about marriage and the home and the family and the husband-wife relationship? Oh, we could talk all week. If you've never been to the Marriage Builders class next time it takes place, I would really encourage you to take it and learn all you can and build your marriage. But I really, honestly, truly gave you the ABCs. And if you take the ABCs, you can build the whole language out of the foundation that I just gave you. And don't forget this one thing. It's really the most important of all. Love your wives like Christ loved the church. Remember what that lady said? The only face I could see was that of the man who was willing to die for me. One day we're going to stand before the Son of God and see the one who died for us. He shed his blood so that we could be free from our sin, have a home in heaven, be saved, be born again, not have to go to hell for all eternity. Do you know him? Have you trusted him? Is he your example for life? Would you bow with me, please?